Good afternoon, everyone. So, here we are, first day of our five-day non-residential retreat. And some of you have been here the day, some of you have been here part of the day. Either way, we do make a little bit of a community. You know, we're in it together, we're practicing together. Each individual person's presence and practice is a contribution to everyone else, because, you know, it's a lot easier to practice when you know other people are practicing. It's the community that puts together the retreat that makes the retreat, and you've come to the retreat and you're one of the people who's made it. So we have a little community. And I thought it might be nice to go around the room before I give a talk, and everyone can say their names, so at least know, hear the people's voices once.
Hilda.
Gary.
Ms. Hart.
David.
And Gail.
Sergio.
Wendy. Samantha.
Martin.
Bill.
Pat.
Michelle.
Carol.
Nye. So. I think when a lot of people first start doing a Buddhist practice or mindfulness practice, there's a lot of learning that goes on around letting go, learning to let go. And it becomes really clear, I think, early on, if you're practicing, that the mind is often caught in the grips of preoccupations, thoughts, emotions, all kinds of things. And it's holding on for dear life. Or it's just holding on tight, or just there's attachment there, there's things we're caught by. And that in order for us to somehow be at peace, be at ease, be here in the present moment in a full way, there has to be some letting go of the preoccupations that keep us from being present. So for many people, the beginning of practice is becoming familiar with all those centrifugal forces that pull us away, carry us away. Take us into the future, into the past, into fantasy, get us caught up in our emotions and feelings. And it can be quite humbling to try to practice mindfulness and to realize how much the mind wanders off and has a mind of its own, and you come back and wanders off again. And so you might start identifying particular themes, particular things that you really wish you could let go of. You really wish you could let go of, it can be as petty as songs that are going through your head. It's going on and on and on. You hear these songs. Or you can let go of the inner judge, the critic, the self-critic that's judging yourself or judging what's going on. Or you can let go of certain emotional patterns. You can let go of, I wish I wasn't always afraid. You know, every breath I take, I seem like I'm afraid I'm never going to have another breath again, and this is it. Fear can be quite pervasive. Or it can be judgments. I'm realizing how much I'm always judging and judging. It's so painful. And it's so painful just to think that I'm seeing the world always through my judgments. What would it be like to be aware of other people without judging so quickly? I wish I could let go of that judging. So to some degree, a big part of Buddhist practice is learning to let go. And it takes a lot of skill. Some of the letting go happens directly. Some of it happens indirectly. So if you focus on your breath, which some people can do and get concentrated, the more the life, more your energy of attention, the attention of energy goes into the breath, the more of it that's available, less of it that's available for distractions or for other things. And the more absorbed you get in the breath, at least temporarily, there tends to be a lot of letting go of things on the sides, because things become peripheral and fall away. Sometimes it's only temporary. You come out of the concentrated state and the preoccupations come back. Sometimes just being in a relaxing environment on a retreat and giving enough time and space away from your normal activities lets you kind of just slowly begin to relax and relax and relax, and the usual preoccupations start getting more and more distant. I think some of this, especially if you go on a long retreat, you can feel how certain things seem so powerful and important in the psyche the first day or the first 2 days. But then you could go for a 30-day retreat, for example. By day 28 or day 14 or something, what was that I was concerned about? What was that about, you know? You know, it seems so distant. And you can do that, you know, if you go in the Sierras or go on a vacation, even for a weekend, you go up to the Sierras, go hiking for 2 days. You can pretty much very quickly leave a lot of things behind that are hard to leave behind, because when we're in the middle of it all. So sometimes letting go happens kind of, you know, naturally in a sense, or, and sometimes it happens because we can identify the place where we're holding. We can identify the place of clinging. We can identify that somehow the mind has picked up some thought, some feeling, or it's resisting, or it's churning away. It's kind of somehow there's something we're gripped. And sometimes that sense of being gripped, it can be felt physically. And you can feel how picking something up and getting absorbed in something and attached to something feels like tension in the body. You might feel it in your shoulders, in your jaws, in your neck, in your forehead, in your eyes, many different places where that might be there. It can also be somewhat more mental, the feeling of being attached, of being holding on tight. And you can feel sometimes, perhaps people feel like a contraction in the mind, or or a tightness, or a narrowing, a darkening even sometimes, as you get kind of focused there. And so there's a variety of ways of feeling it. And often in feeling and experiencing it, sometimes you feel it's very intimately connected to our emotional life. It's in various kinds of emotions that very closely give fuel and support to strength to holding on tight, gripping. So then becoming aware of how it feels like, then sometimes you can begin to let go. We can learn to identify what needs to be let go of. Sometimes it's a physical thing. We go into the body and let go of the physical tension and the holding. And sometimes letting go of the body is enough to let go of the attachment. You attach to something that you want to have. Say you really want to have, I don't know what. What you really want is a cup of coffee. Maybe it's a bad example. But say you really want, you know, a smoothie. And that's what you really want, a smoothie. That's going to make your day just perfect. And you really want that smoothie. And you feel that there's tension in your belly and your shoulders around wanting that smoothie. You're sort of leaning forward a little bit. You're kind of like hoping that bell rings so you can rush out to Jamba Juice and get that smoothie. And you feel the tension. You feel leaning forward. You feel what it's like. You can feel the physicality of it. And then it might be possible to relax it and settle back. And as the body relaxes, some of that drive for a smoothie just relaxes at the same time, because the connection between the body and the mind is so intimate, so close. Sometimes when you relax the body, it's enough. Sometimes you see that there are certain beliefs that you're attached to, and so perhaps you can let go of that belief, or something can soften around the belief, or you have some new information, you see it in a new way, and okay, I'll let go of that belief, and that is like dominoes. A lot of other things can let go of then in the wake of that. Sometimes it's through the powers of mindfulness. You can find the place of attachment. You don't see how you can let go, but you bring it mindfulness to where the tension or the holding is, and just hold it in awareness for a long time, very lovingly, clearly, just hold it. And it's very hard, sooner or later, holding will let go. It's a nature of holding to want to let go. Holding is a doing. It takes energy. And whenever something takes energy, it's inherent in that it wants to relax and rest. So I kind of believe inherent in all our tensions, all our holdings, is an inherent movement for release, for relaxing, for letting go. But we keep fueling it, we keep feeding it, we keep it up. You don't just attach once and freeze, generally. We attach and then we reattach and we reattach moment by moment if you really pay attention. So by holding it in awareness, sometimes finally we step out of its orbit, we step out of the reactive mode to it, we stop participating in it, and they can relax. So for many people, in the beginning of practice, it's a lot to do with learning about letting go. When we have let go to some degree, okay, then there's a whole other phase of practice, and that is when we've let go well, then we have two choices after that. One choice is the things that come along, we can pick them up, or we can let them be. And some things should be picked up. If you go on a 30-day retreat, and you let go of so many stuff, you let go of so much. And as you leave the retreat, certain things should be picked up. Certain ideas and concepts should be picked up and used. So for example, on the retreat, you might not need to use any concept of green and yellow and red lights, traffic lights. That's not a needed concept. So you can let go of it. But get on the road after the retreat, you better use that concept. You have to pick it up. There's a lot of concepts we pick up that are useful in certain contexts. And so we have to pick it up. There might be certain ideas of identity. There might be certain ideas of, you know, needs that have to be picked up. There's a lot of things that should be picked up. You come home, your refrigerator is empty. And so you pick up the idea of getting, you know, going to the store and going shopping. But when you've let go some, just whatever degree you've let go, it gives you greater choice about what you choose to pick up. And some things that you did before, maybe you don't never want to pick up again. And some things you say, well, that you did before, you do want to pick up. Or some things you've never done before, you decide that this is something I want to pick up. This is something I want to incorporate into my life. So, you know, if you spend a lot of time gossiping or slandering other people, you might feel, you know, when I come back from that retreat, you know, I'm not going to pick that one up. Thank you. So I can see that impulse to slander, but I'm not going to pick it up. I'm going to let it, you know, I'm going to let it be. Maybe just let it be. I'm not going to pick it up. I'm not going to get involved. Or it could be that you've been introduced to loving kindness practice, and you come back to your life into a very difficult situation. Maybe you're in conflict with someone. Someone's in conflict with you. And I said, well, you know, I could go to my old patterns of reactivity when someone's in conflict. I could run away. I could attack them. I could do all kinds of things. But what I could do is I could pick up loving kindness. And I can maybe head to loving kindness to that person. And loving kindness has a tremendous effect, sometimes very unseen. So there's more choice available if we have learned to let go well about what we pick up. If you're carrying four big suitcases down the road and holding on tight, you can't put them down because you just can't. And then you see some beautiful treasure in the road, or see another suitcase, or someone's there kind of struggling with a suitcase and they could use help. But you know, if you're carrying, you know, these poor big suitcases, you don't have any hands available to respond to what's happening next. So, but if you let go, if your hands are open, then you're available for what comes along. So people who are completely caught up in their attachments, there's not much space to pick up new things. When you learn to let go really well, then you can be much more creative about what you choose to pick up. And that creativity is part of the function of letting go, to have greater creativity, greater choices. And I love the little story from the Chinese Buddhist tradition of a seeker who was climbing up the mountain. For the mountain is the mountain of enlightenment. You get to the top, I guess you get enlightened. So the seeker was going up the mountain. And coming down the mountain was Manjushri. Manjushri is the embodiment of wisdom, the bodhisattva of wisdom. He's supposed to be enlightened. And he was coming down the mountain in the guise of walking down the mountain carrying this big bag over his shoulder. And the seeker sees Manjushri and says, how do you get enlightened? That's what the seeker is searching for. And so Manjushri is holding this big bag, and he drops the bag. That's the answer. And the seeker says, well, thank you. That was a very clear answer. And after enlightenment, what then? It's a fair question. What do you do then? Once you retire, what are you supposed to do then? That's a question people ask. After enlightenment, what do you do then? And so then Manjushri picks up the bag, puts it over his shoulder, and continues down the mountain. So, you know, there's a time for letting go and there's a time for picking up. But you don't necessarily pick up the same bags as you had before. You could pick up new bags. But one of the really remarkable opportunities that come along when the mind has let go to some degree doesn't have to be much. But I think the greater the degree, the more poignant this kind of practice becomes. And that's the practice of letting things be. So you can let go, you can pick up, and you can let be. So you see a thought arise in the mind, and you just let it be. There's no mental movement to pick it up, no contractions, no reaching out, no holding on, no picking it up. Just let it be, and it passes through. Or someone, a feeling comes up, and you just let it be. Don't pick it up, you don't push it away. The presence of things doesn't mean that you've picked it up. It can mean that, but it doesn't mean you've picked it up. You're just kind of coming through. One way to pick up things is to take them personally. Have a thought arise in your mind. Oh no, how could I have that kind of terrible thought? I hope no one noticed in here. It's happening to me, it's my thought, and I'm the one who's being defined by this thought. I hope no one sees me this way. There's a lot of selfing in there. We've picked it up with the grip of self. But to have some, you know, unsavory thought go through the mind and not to take it as self is to let it be. Oh, look at that. There's a thought going through. You might feel, if you're going down the street and you see a shop window and it has something for sale there, and you can see the impulse, desire, I want that. So you can pick that desire up and go and buy it, or you can just let it be. See the desire, just let it be. And there's a tremendous freedom, a feeling of really little joy that comes from a mind that it's like a hand that stays open. Open hand feels kind of good. And you go across things, you know, buy things, and it just feels so good not to have contracted that hand. So many different ways we can contract it, right? But you know, you don't contract it. You just kind of like, you know, it stays open for the breeze, open, fresh, nice. Available for what's needed if something's needed. So to have a mind that learns not to pick things up, just goes through. The expression sometimes in Buddhism is like clouds in an endless sky. The sky is very spacious, very open, and sooner or later things will pass through the sky. Thoughts will pass through. And just let them drift through like clouds. Clouds don't disturb the sky. The sky doesn't disturb the clouds. Just let it be. Let it drift through. So to let things be. So three choices. Do you let go? I'll make it complicated. Four choices that you can do. You can study your holding, study your attachments. You can let go. You can let be. And you can pick up. Four wonderful activities. And in different times in practice, different ones of those activities is what's called for. There are times we want to study what's going on, study the attachments. There are times, if we can, we just let go. And to come on retreat today, a lot of you had to do some kind of letting go, I imagine. You probably had other things you could have done today and other thoughts and ideas. And, you know, you had to let go of speaking for the most part. You come here and it's certainly letting go of being here. And then letting be. You know, just let be. Don't get caught up in a reactive mode to what happens. Don't be for or against things. Just let them come through. And then it's just exquisite to learn to let things be. If you learn the right way, there's a healthy way of doing it. And sometimes it feels a bit tantalizing, like or tentative or vulnerable to let things be because maybe it's kind of like if your palm is open, someone come along, kind of lightly tickle your palm. It's kind of tantalizing or a little bit, you know, tender. So when your mind is that kind of open and letting things be, some of these things come along and kind of tickle and tempt. I find it particularly interesting when there's temptation there. So you let things be, but there is this movement to pick it up, and you feel this temptation, and so just let it be. It's kind of, I kind of enjoy it. And then there's a movement of picking up. And picking up the things that are wise to pick up. Think of those things that further your spiritual growth or further the welfare of your community. So, that's all I have. So some of you are here for much of the week or the whole week to do the non-residential retreat, and you have a variety of choices of what you do when you leave here. One is when you leave here to let go of it, to let go of IMC until you come back tomorrow morning. Another possibility is to pick up the idea of a retreat that extends beyond being here in this building. And so to pick up some ideas of how you want to conduct yourself this evening. So you can leave here, what you do at home, what you do at home in the morning. And again, there's many choices. Some people might choose to be really quiet. Maybe if you can go home and just be silent, people like that. And just continue maybe even the sitting practice or meditation practice into the evening and keep it really quiet and keep the whole thing kind of much more of this quiet retreat mode. Maybe not check email or do mail or phone calls if you can. Just keep it really simple. Some people find that holding on to something outside of the retreat itself is counterproductive. It's like holding on to something that's not happening. And it's better just to forget about it when you leave here and just throw yourself into what's happening at home. Okay, I got to do this well and be here. And I'm not going to try to hold on to some mode I'm supposed to be at. And by giving yourself that kind of freedom, just kind of being present, you actually come back the next day more refreshed than if you did try to, you know. Some people like to do some kind of a moderate, you know, some in between perhaps. Some people like to go home and maybe read a little bit of a spiritual book, keep more in the flow of it. Some people, there are all kinds of things you could choose to do. But what I ask you to do, those of you who've come for the week, is to do it, whatever you decide to do, is to do it consciously, with thought, with consideration. Whichever option you take. So you don't just leave here and it's mindless what happens next. You go back to life as usual without thinking about it. But you actually think a little bit about what serves you the best, what's the most useful thing to pick up and how to be as you go from here. So do you have any questions about what I've said or about the retreat this week? Anything you'd like to ask?
I've often wondered, this walking Buddha out here, she has her hands up, and you, when you're giving your Dharma talk, also put your hand up when you're saying, just let things be. But I've always wondered, what does that sign mean? What she's talking about?
It's the mudra or the gesture of fearlessness. Uh-huh. So it's a kind of an offering of being of safety. Offering safety to the world. Like, you have nothing to fear from me. Like, you know, if your dog comes along barking, you show them, you open your hand, you know, to show, you know, you're safe, you're not holding a stick or anything. And so it's the gesture of fearlessness.